So where do you turn for advice on how to live a good and meaningful life? Your religion, your family, community, great books by wise men and women? Poet David White finds inspiration in overlooked words, the kind of words we use every day but don't often examine, like vulnerability.
Vulnerability is not a weakness, a passing indisposition, or something we can arrange to do without. Vulnerability is not a choice. Vulnerability is the underlying, ever-present, and abiding undercurrent of our natural state. To run from vulnerability is to run from the essence of our nature. The attempt to be invulnerable is the vain attempt to become something we are not, and most especially, to close off our understanding of the grief of others. More seriously, in refusing our vulnerability, we refuse the help needed at every turn of our existence and immobilize the essential, tidal, and conversational foundations of our identity.
David White told Steve Paulson what he discovered by looking past superficial definitions and considering the deeper, often surprising meanings of everyday words.
Part of my approach to these words is as a metaphor of life itself. We take just the surface part that we can handle. But there are deeper, more nourishing, but also more disturbing aspects to words, which they have another legacy, and there's another possibility of living in a different way through them.
So what you're doing here is you're taking these words that I guess we don't really think about that much and kind of unpacking them in a way.
Yes, we have thought about them, but we've just thought about them in unconscious ways.
Well, I'm struck also by, I mean, the fact that you are picking everyday words, which to some degree would seem to be maybe the opposite of what poets often do. I mean, they pick the unusual word to capture attention, but it's as if you want to reclaim things that we almost just say automatically without even thinking about it.
Yes, and it's to rehabilitate words that we think that represent states that we're often trying to flee from. One of my favorite lines in the book that I overheard myself saying was the first line of the essay on despair. I mean, no one wants to feel despair, no one. And yet everyone does feel despair at crucial moments in their life. And so the line that gave me so much solace was, despair takes us in when we have nowhere else to go. Despair takes us in when we have nowhere else to go. So it's a temporary, we arrange a temporary illusion for ourselves that we've given up hope. And it's in order just to give up our old hopes so that some embryonic form of new hope can actually occur when you've lost a child or a spouse or a close friend. You're not meant to understand actually what's occurred. And in fact, they have been holding a certain inner foundation for you that you now have to come to ground on yourself. But to begin with, you just actually feel as if you're falling. You're just falling through space and time and nothing's holding you at all. So because we have no compassion for that stake, we're constantly trying to jolly other people out of despair or ourselves. You know? It means you can't go through the falling in order to actually come to the ground.
And I'm struck by a lot of the words.
Yes.
I mean, they are, at first blush, they would seem to be, these are the difficult things in life.
Exactly, yes.
But your point often seems to be, you have to go through that to get it. What's important?
Well, it's just because the poet's task is to turn people's ears and eyes towards what is not being spoken and what is not being seen. And so it's a natural inclination that occurs out of practicing the art form of poetry. The poet's always tried to turn society's eyes and ears towards what it is not seeing. And it's one of the reasons why poetry will always be just below the radar. It's very hard for mainstream media, especially television, to actually exploit poetry or because it's unexploitable in that way.
Let's take another one of those difficult words, heartbreak.
Heartbreak,
Tell me about that. Or if you'd like, you could read a passage.
Well, heartbreak is something we think we have a choice about. And the hope is you can put your feet in all the right places and God will look after you and keep you in the manner to which you want to become accustomed. And it's quite a consolation to understand that there is no path a human being can take where you will not have your heart broken. every romantic endeavor, every romantic relationship, every marriage will always lead to heartbreak. And even the longest marriage has had its heart broken many times just to stay together during that time. You look at parenting, and there's no parent ever lived who hasn't had their heart broken in some way or another by their son or their daughter. You look at a close examination of that strange and untoward stranger we call the self, and you will always get your heart broken by what you have to offer. You should get to a point where you don't know if the gift you have is enough. And that's not to do with not having self-esteem. It has to do with putting yourself into a proper relationship with reality. And the proper relationship with reality is that you need help. You need to ask for help from something or someone other than yourself. And it's the same thing in work. A sincere application to your vocation or your work should lead to heartbreak. If you're real about your work, you should get to a place, a cliff edge, a river's edge, where you don't know how to get across.
Otherwise, it doesn't really mean that much to you.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. You don't know how to do it. And again, that puts you into a proper relationship with things because you have to ask for others. You have to apprentice yourself to someone else. There has to be something larger than you.
You know, one of the things that it strikes me that you're doing here is you're naming things. I mean, you're picking words to name experiences that we have, feelings that we have. And I was even thinking about, there's something comparable to the naturalist who goes out into the forest and, you know, creates this taxonomy of the plants and the animals out there, and you're doing it with words in a way.
I love that analogy. Having been trained as a biologist early on and having despaired of naming the natural world, having lived in the Galapagos Islands as a naturalist, that's quite a compliment.
Do you see any connections between your background as a biologist and what you do as a poet?
Yes, because you're looking at life, and words have their own life. They're very powerful. There are certain words that are used in certain cultures. There are certain words that are just used in families. So, yes, I'm looking at life forms and trying to, almost like a documentary film would expose, hopefully, the wonder of a particular form of life, whether it's a tree frog in the Amazon rainforest. You can look at a word like honesty.
Mm. Could you read some of that?
Yeah, we tend to think of honesty, for instance, as a kind of weapon against life or against my colleagues in a meeting room or against my right. Spouse, you know.
You might be honest, but no one's going to love you for that.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Would you like me to be honest, you say?
Right.
No, I would not like you to be honest.
Right.
Thank you very much. I'd like you to keep it to yourself. Yeah. So this is more difficult, but perhaps a fuller understanding of honesty, but it's quite disturbing at the same time, which is why we like to go to just the peripheral definition of honesty. Honesty. Honesty is reached through the doorway of grief and loss, where we cannot go in our mind, our memory, or our body, is where we cannot be straight with another, with the world, or with ourselves. The fear of loss, in one form or another, is the motivator behind all conscious and unconscious dishonesties. All of us are afraid of loss, in all its forms. All of us at times are haunted or overwhelmed by the possibility of a disappearance. And all of us, therefore, are one short step away from dishonesty. Every human being dwells intimately close to a door of revelation they are afraid to pass through. Honesty lies in understanding our close and necessary relationship with not wanting to hear the truth.
You know, as I was listening to you read that, it made me wonder if being a writer, being a poet, writing something like this helps you see the world more deeply, helps you live better, or does it work the other way around? It's through life's travails that you can write this kind of thing.
I'd say they're mutually reinforcing. The poetry makes you pay attention and apprentices you to hidden meaning and turns you into a hunter of the truth, in a sense. And that's not truth as an arrived platform, but as a conversational dynamic. That's the truth. The only truth you can get to is the meeting that's real. you know, with your son or daughter, in a heartfelt conversation with your spouse, your partner, with a colleague you're having differences with. And then that most difficult conversation of all, holding a fruitful conversation with yourself. So many ways of holding internal conversations are so coercive. Yeah. And if you spoke to others the way you spoke to yourself, you'd never have another friend in your life. Right? So a really beautiful and disturbing question that's really opens up another horizon is, how can I actually be more invitational to the best part of myself? Hmm. And what do I respond to, actually? What would I respond to in another person?
What a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Poet David White is the author of Consolations, The Solace, Nourishment, and Underlying Meaning of Everyday Words.